Welcome into the On Point Podcast, episode 3 for the 2017-18 season. We've got GP on finally. How's it going, man?
Going good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, we've been talking for a long time, but not on a podcast. So, yeah, finally good to have you on board. And we've got back from hiatus, Aiden. How's things going, all right?
Yeah, good, man.
So we've got a few things to go over tonight. We're going to talk about the Bledsoe trade first, maybe a couple of other guys that are on the block and sort of looking to move teams, so we'll have a talk about a few of those guys as well. Then we're going to go over our own teams and comment on how we think they're going and progress that they've made so far. First we'll get into the biggest trade of the season so far, Eric Bledsoe from the Bucks, gone to the Bucks from the Suns, for Munro and 3 picks, I think it is. So, thoughts on that trade, Aiden? Start with you.
I think it works for both. It was only 2 picks, but the first round pick from the Bucks is pretty heavily protected. So it looks like they won't get it. Phoenix won't get it until about 2020. And then the second round pick is a late second round pick. It's top 47 protected. So for the Bucks, you're not giving up too much to take a chance on Bledsoe. But for Phoenix, they got something back for a guy who had essentially forced his hand and everyone knew he was on his way out. Munro hasn't played for them yet. I'm not sure if he's even going to. They're saying he's injured at the moment, but there's talks of a buyout.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. I think it's a bit of a win-win, really. Phoenix got a couple of picks for a guy that didn't want to be there, and the Bucks get an upgrade.
So your thoughts on that, GP? Any winner in the trade, or a bit of a win-win as well for both teams?
Probably. I think it was always going to be hard for the Suns to be able to get anything much. Again, like Aiden said, for somebody who was trying to get out, the Bucks certainly got better because they got rid of somebody who was on, I guess, not a fantastic contract for them, considering that they didn't have him in the future. Munro was never going to be looked at as a future Buck. He's certainly not within the within the direction that team's going, and Bledsoe's still young enough to kind of still grow with those younger guys behind him. He's not too far in front of them, so I think, and that's probably the gap they had at that point guard role. They had Brogdon there, but he's more of a combo guard. I guess Bledsoe is too, but he's a stronger option than Brogdon at this stage. So I think it's a real good trade for them. As far as the Suns go, like I said before, it was going to be tough for them to get anything. Quite impressed that they managed to get a first round draft pick. That heavy protection's probably not something that they were too worried about. I think they won't use him. There's no point in putting Greg Munro out there. He probably gets you a couple of wins because he's quite strong offensively. So the Suns don't want to win. they should be tanking. The Suns fans should be angry if they keep winning. They should be tanking, trying to get the best draft pick possible.
Yeah, well, it's the last sort of year as well to really tank properly, so doing it this year would be the year to do it. There was a lot of talk out there that the Suns should have got back more than just Munro, but I agree with you guys as well. I mean, it's an expiring for one. I mean, yeah, they could buy him out, and he's not going to play much, and they get the pick, so that's what they ultimately what they want. So on the Milwaukee side, was Bledsoe the right type of player that they needed to go alongside Giannis? Is that the right area they need to address? I mean, because how I sort of see that they need rebounding is probably their thing that they lack the most. I think Bledsoe is a good fit, but was it the ideal set of skills or type of player to come into that team? Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Or
probably a good point, actually, when you do think about that. I think having that, you want to have Giannis as your primary ball carrier, effectively. So I guess when you look at that, the fact that Bledsoe is still a little bit of a combo guard. That probably not horrible, but you're right. Yeah, their rebounding's pretty weak. So, no, maybe they're trying to build Thonmaker into that role. And become their elite rim protector and garbage man getting rebounds.
Yeah, ideally he'd be that. I mean, if he can grab boards and protect the rim as well, he's the perfect fit. I mean, he hit threes, got the length, you know, and the thing's all about switching on defense and stuff like that. And Bledsoe's good for that as well. I mean, he could probably guard some threes, really, even though he's quite short, but he's got the toughness.
His wingspan's 7 foot.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned that there, I think.
Yeah, he is quite long. And if he can defend like he did at the Clippers, man, he's him and plus Brogdon or Dally or Snell or whoever they want to play at the two. I mean, that's pretty good defensive backcourt, yeah. You go, Adam.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I think GP summed it up pretty well. The thing, I was a little hesitant with Bledsoe. Just because he's not like Giannis needs the ball and Bledsoe's not a great shooter, only 33% for his career. And he's been pretty terrible for the three games he's played so far. But for the price the Bucks paid, I think it was definitely worth a shot.
Yeah, I have to agree on that. And with the Suns as well, like, I think they did well getting back those picks. I mean, who else really needed a point guard? I mean, yeah, that three-teamer with the Pistons and the Pelicans could have worked, but the Pelicans probably didn't want Reggie Jackson. I don't think he would have fit very well there. And then you go through the West, I mean, you got young teams of young point guards that they've just drafted, or then you got superstars or really good players. So I thought they did quite well, the Suns there, getting back and exploring in those picks. So I thought it was a win-win in the end. Yeah, so we've got, that sort of sums up that trade. And I've sort of want to elaborate a little bit about that rebounding issue with the Bucks. And do they trade Jabari now that when he comes back healthy? Do they look for a trade for Jabari? What do you guys think on that?
Yeah, no, I do. You know, he's had two serious injuries in his short career so far. So rather than, make the decision, because he's going to demand a maximum contract. So rather than make that decision yourself, you know, send him somewhere else, get something in return, and let another team make that decision.
He's not worth a max, eh? But you're right. There's been talk of him wanting that kind of money. You could be best to trade him to somebody. Somebody like the Hawks would be interested in him, wouldn't they? They've got young guy to try and be a good piece for them. Not
John
necessarily
Collins.
A build around.
Yeah.
He looks good, eh? I like John Collins.
Yeah, they've got some pieces there at the Hawks. I mean, I just can't stand Schroeder. But other than that, like Muscala and Bazemore and even Deadman's all right. But yeah.
Deadman's been playing well.
Yeah, I think Jabari would fit in quite well there, actually. So, because we're thinking about a few little trades we could do. I might as well start with mine since I've already half done it. And this is more leaning towards you, Aiden. Would you trade Dwight and one of your young two guards that you got there, like Bacon or Stone, for Dally and Jabari? You might have to throw in a pick as well. So the Bucks sort of address a bit of rebounding and rim protection there, and then you guys will get Jabari into that, and then you could start Zeller and Jabari in the front court and have Dally as a backup. Would that work?
I actually don't hate that. Like, I was going to talk a bit later about how Dwight is having himself a pretty solid season.
He is
since coming back, except for his free throws, but that's a whole other thing. But we need a secondary scorer. Like, that's what we need. We've got defense. We've got Cody Zeller. He's playing a lot less minutes than he should be off the bench. So, no, I would very strongly consider doing that, despite Dwight revitalizing our defense this season. I think we've got enough to cover for the loss of Dwight. Bringing in someone like Jabari, I think that would be a good fit.
How are you,
JP? I kind of like that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not obviously don't have the one-eyed Hornets fan on that Aiden has, but yeah, I don't hate it. I quite like Dwayne Bacon. I think he's something that someone who could develop into a role player. You know, definitely got that, got size and can shoot. So you know, it's not a horrible option.
Yeah, I just thought that could be an interesting spot for Jabari, maybe to the Hornets. So we're talking before, maybe a few guys on the block, Julius Randle, Kenneth Faried, anyone else we want to sort of add to that list?
I just heard you guys mention a name before. What about someone like Kent Bazemore? Like, he doesn't really have much of a future in Atlanta. They want to rebuild, and, you know, he's not a kind of guy you want to rebuild around. He's getting about $17 million a year for the next 3 years.
Yeah, I suppose he could be an interesting piece on a contending team, maybe a sort of a six-man role, or who would really need a... Yeah, I mean, he could be... Yeah, if they really want to do the rebuild properly, yeah, maybe he's one of the guys that they give up. Yeah, maybe to a... Yeah, contending team. I don't know if there's the right salary. I mean, $17 million, 3 years.
Yeah, you probably have to do a three-team and get Brooklyn involved, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Faried and Randle. Faried's, to me, I think he's going to be very hard to move. I think maybe, like, Minnesota could use him if they maybe decided Gibson or Jing isn't right for them. I think he could be a right by a guy like Cat. There's just not many. He's really becoming old really fast, sort of like Roy Hibbert and the traditional bigs. There's not much room now for those energy guys. I mean, he wants to start, and he made a big fuss about it, which, you know, the way the NBA's going, I think he's a bit delusional, but it's not many spots now. Maybe that 15-minute role is all he can really hope to get now. Yeah, did you guys find any good spots where Fred could end up?
China.
NZNBL.
Yeah, haven't spoken to Rob, my podcast sport buddy, but about it. But he will tell you that I'm not a big Kenneth Faried fan. The only time that Kenneth Faried's ever been any good was on the USA team, where he was the fifth man on offense, and all he was doing was going after boards, and that's his role. If you have all shooters around him and he just goes and gets the boards, you know, it uses all that energy, like you were mentioning before. That's the only place. That's the only team that's gonna have him be effective.
Yeah, thoughts on that, Aiden? Anywhere, find anywhere for him to land? A team that might need a guy like that?
Well, I said to GP yesterday that his skill set's probably a decade late. You know, he's got the same sort of skill set as someone like your Jerome Williams from back in the day, the old Junkyard Dog.
Junkyard Dog. Yeah, yep. I picked him up in 2K quite often.
Yeah. The only place I could find where he wants to start, the only team I could really find where he could start is Brooklyn. And the only trade I could get is for Trevor Booker. And, you know, that's not really going to get much else.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Brooklyn would really gain much either, would they?
Brooklyn
would
need a pick. So Denver only needs to do it if they want a clear salary cap.
Yeah, so
it's literally all I could find, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, so Randle, I think, would definitely gather a lot more interest. I think, like, Randle, Jokic or a Randle, Porzingis front court, something like that would be the ideal spot. So I was thinking maybe a trade to the Knicks for Julius Randle. Yeah, maybe for one of their bigs that are expiring. I mean, even he's sort of limited in a way of where he can land. But yeah, I was thinking, yeah, maybe alongside Porzingis. Any thoughts there, GP, on where Randle could end up, even though he is expiring, and that's all the Lakers might want to do?
That's not a horrible idea either, actually, because Zinger can still spread the floor, and although Randall's developing that longer shot away from the rim, he hasn't got it quite yet. So that's not a horrible option. I think if they can't find anything, through the season, they obviously need to clear that cap space. I think if Paul George is looking to still go there, you could be looking at a Thunder to trade for him, to do a sign and trade with Paul George. Do the something like a Clarkson and Randall for George kind of deal.
Yeah, that would make sense. I think something like that could work. Yeah, so it depends if the Lakers sort of want them to walk or not. So they do have a team option. No, that's they picked that up for this year, didn't they? Yeah, so yeah, he's
No, he's
definitely
expiring.
expiring. Maybe they can get back a couple of picks or something. Maybe that's what they end up doing. But I do like that Paul George one if he is going to walk from
Yeah,
OKC.
no,
So,
I like that as well.
and
I
the
just
truck.
think that the Lakers will struggle to afford Paul George without doing a sign and trade if they no if nothing happens. Now they want to try and make enough room for to get somebody else. They're going to try and get rid of that. Get rid of those bigger salaries, and those two are the Clarkson and Randall are the two that you could obviously sign and trade Randall. The other two that could make up a decent enough salary, they're young enough to still help the Thunder, so the Thunder would have some interest. And they're quality enough to still help the Thunder.
Yeah, and Deng as well. Yeah, Lowell Deng, if they could, they need to get that contract off the
Yeah.
books. Yeah. And yeah, and just going back to Fareed for a second there, he's got owed $13.5 million for next season. Not looking good.
Makes it even harder to move.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe a guy like Deng as well, I think I mean, his experience and leadership would be well sought after commodity in a contender. Maybe do the Lakers buy him out, or is there a way they can get him off the books? Can they get him to maybe like a Rockets or something like that? I don't know if the Rockets won't have much space at all.
The only thing I had a look at moving Deng earlier, and the only thing I saw was Deng and Randle for Ryan Anderson, and that works salary wise. But I don't see why Houston would do it because it gives them a worse 3-point shooter than Randle. Like Anderson still hits those threes, and then Deng's well, he's paid the same amount as Anderson, so but that's all I could find.
Yeah, that's not too bad, that one, actually. I mean, they're playing Anderson at the five now, so maybe, I don't know, maybe you can't play Deng there, so maybe, yeah, they wouldn't go for that. Clarkson would be, I mean, he's another bomber, so they like those, so he's another shooter in Houston. But yeah, maybe that could work, but yeah, I can't really see it happening. Yeah, maybe his salary's a bit too high for him to move. Maybe a buyout's the only option.
Buyout seems to be the more likely option anyway.
Yeah. So a lot of contenders for buyouts, really. We haven't really solved many issues there, but so we might as well get on to having a bit of a review on our teams. Might as well start with the Hornets since we brought them up a little bit before. Yeah, just fire away, Aiden, what you like, what you don't like, and how they've been tracking. And then
Okay,
we'll
well,
have a bit of a comment as well.
Sweet. As I mentioned before, I really like what Dwight has brought to the team. He seems to be renewed under Steve Clifford again. He's averaging his highest rebound total since his last year in Orlando. He's averaging his highest points in four seasons now, I think it is. The only thing that's really bringing him down is his free throws. He's shooting that Andre Drummond level 40%. Well, Andre Drummond
not
last
anymore.
Season level.
Not anymore.
Yeah, Andre Drummond last season, Andre Drummond level 40%, which is it's actually hurting us. It brings us down to, I think we are dead last in free throw percentage.
Wow, who are your other really bad free throw shooters in? Must be MKG,
that's
maybe?
That's pretty much him. He's bringing us down. Another thing I like, which actually surprised me, because if you'll remember when Batum was injured, I sort of scoffed at the idea. Jeremy Lamb has been really good, averaging 17 points a game, shooting 45% from three, grabbing about 5.5 rebounds a game. He's been just really, really good for us. And now Batum's coming back tomorrow, so it's, I don't know if he's going to go back to being the useless guy that I remember, or if Steve Clifford can make it work with everyone involved.
So when Batum comes back, do you throw him straight into that two spot, or do you actually keep Lamb in there and put Batum at the three?
What I wanted them to do a couple of years ago is start MKG at the four, small ball four. The problem is he can't shoot at all, and it just, we already have problems stretching the floor as it is. So I don't think that'll work. But in saying that, MKG coming off the bench is also, it ruins his effectiveness. Like, he's a lockdown guy. He's like a Tony Allen type thing, where he sort of really needs to start to be effective.
Yeah, and that's where it's hard in today's NBA. I mean, you got two non-shooters already. If you have to start them, and then those other three guys basically have to hit the long range shot. I mean, if you have less than three guys, I mean, it's even less than four, even going five now. I mean, yeah, you're really limiting what you can do on offense.
Yeah, and it's sort of the way this team was built. They're sort of built with the sort of old school sort of thing, you know. They're almost the new grit and grind, almost, with the way they play. Hard defense, no turnovers, and just, you know, not much offense. What else did I like from? Yeah, offensively, we're awful. We're last in free throw percentage. And to answer your question from before, Cody Zeller's at 60%, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at 50%, and Dwight at 40%. Everyone else is above 70%. So that's who's bringing us down. We're bottom 10 in field goal percentage, three-point percentage. We're dead last in free throw percentage, but we're third in free throw attempts, so that's not really a good mix either.
get into the line, but...
We're just not hitting them. 26 in assists, which also means we're playing a lot of ISO ball, but we don't really have the offensive guys beyond Kemba to pull that off. Our offense, it stinks, to put it bluntly.
So what have you sort of seen in these young two guards? I mean, you got this whole stack of these sort of D-League guys or G-League guys now, that you sort of have brought in. Stone, Bacon, you got just drafted Malik Monk, Lamb. Yeah, so...
Lamb's having... Like, he's... Oh, sorry, carry on.
Who... So, can any of them sort of solve your offense in a certain sense? I mean, Lamb sort of provided that role in a way. But, what are you seeing from Malik Monk and those guys?
Malik Monk, he's struggling, man. I think it's just, you know, you can't really put a rookie into that role and just expect him to thrive. Like, it takes a... You know, like a real special talent to do that. Sort of takes, you know, 2 or 3 years to figure out the NBA game for most rookies. He's shooting very poorly from the field. 32% from three, which is a little below average, but yeah, just struggling. Lamb's been good, but I expect him to cool off. Like I don't think 45% is a number he can keep up. I haven't, to be perfectly honest, I haven't. What's that? Sorry.
Traditionally a very hot and cold player, Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I expect those numbers to fall off a little bit anyway. I haven't seen much of Bacon, but I've heard good things. And Julian Stone, the only thing about him is he's ahead of Michael Carter-Williams. So him being around means Michael Carter-Williams doesn't play, which is great.
Yeah, well, you would have seen a bit of Lamb at the Thunder, their GP. You seen much from the Hornets this season?
Oh, I've seen a bit. I guess one thing that I guess it kind of stands out, obviously, with the prediction machine that I've been working on, and we've been trying to figure out a way to get injured players into that. And when I've worked out the amounts of points that the teams would have to adjust the prediction by based on certain players being off the court. If you guys lose Kemba Walker, you guys are screwed.
It doesn't surprise me.
From the calculations that I'm doing, is worth almost 10.5 points a game adjustment.
Yeah, yeah. You take Kemba out of there, and man, the offense just would. Yeah, it would crumble. And on a side note as well, isn't it good to see like a guy called Lamb and a guy called Bacon on the same team?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Hadn't even thought about that, but now I'm not going to be able to unsee it.
Yeah, that just makes me think of food when I see the Hornets. So, yeah. You got some interesting last names actually in there. You got Monk, Stone, a Page. Plenty of items there to go over. Yeah.
Got the Black Irish guy and Johnny O'Brien.
Yeah, yeah, Black Irish dude. Awesome. Right, Hornets. I haven't seen too much of the Hornets. Man, Walker's just awesome. He should be an all-star pick this season, even though he's not shooting too as well as he could be.
His numbers are down.
Yeah, and we haven't heard a Dwight story come out yet, so that's positive. Man, they need to play Zeller more, I think.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that. Dwight's playing 30 minutes and Zeller's playing 19. I think that sort of needs to be more
25-25. Yeah, we were sort of thinking the other way around, eh? When we talked last about the Hornets, we were thinking Dwight about 18 and Zeller about 30 or something around those sort of areas. So I think, defensively they're going to be fine, but just getting that right mix. I mean, Kaminsky's sort of playing a bigger role as well this season, but his shooting just needs to get a bit more consistent, or just not as good.
He shows glimmers of a pretty well-rounded offense. Like, I've seen him do some moves in the post, and he can hit that three from time to time. But I think what we're seeing is what we get. I don't think he's going to be like he was in college, how he was the college player of the year. I don't think that Frank Kaminsky's coming to the NBA. I think what we're getting now, a serviceable six man, is pretty much it.
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed. Cool.
Yeah, so that's about the Hornets there. I think you're sitting in about 11th or 12th at the moment.
Yeah, four game losing streak. It's kind of funny. We've got the Cavs next, and it's not often you'd think, oh, sweet, the Cavs, we might be able to break this slump.
Yeah. I mean, you have had, so far on your schedule, you have had some tough games so far, so a little bit of a rocky start, but I think you guys will still make the playoffs.
I would be disappointed if we didn't.
Right, well, that's about the Hornets wrapped up there. We'll go to GP's Thunder, most of New Zealand's Thunder. We had young Dylan on last podcast. He's a Thunder fan as well, so it's good to hear his thoughts. But yeah, the far away GP, everyone's talking about the Thunder, good and bad, so yeah, it'll be interesting to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it's funny you say that half of New Zealand, obviously when I'm coaching at the Basketball Academy and we run the Stephen Adams camps and all the Thunder people that come out to those, all the kids, all they want to do is hang out with Steve Adams. He walks past them and the kids stop training. They just want to go hang out with Steve. It's awesome. But
yeah, it is. It's
huge. I did actually put on Facebook when I knew he was quite high chance of being drafted that I had to qualify the fact that I was a Thunder fan before he was there and didn't jump ship because there was a Kiwi on board. So
not a bandwagon fan.
But the Thunder, I mean, it's been a frustrating start. They've definitely shown signs of looking good. And you know, Paul George over the last couple of games has looked really good. Obviously probably helped the fact they didn't have Carmelo there with them in the last game. But I think the biggest thing with Paul George or with the Thunder is that they've kind of been almost oversharing. And until the last couple of games, Westbrook, Melo and Paul George were all averaging between 17 and 17 and a half shots per game. So it was just ridiculously even. And whether that's coincidence or not, it's not a good. No, it's something that all of the skeptics are going to pick up on, and the stuff they're going to talk about. So, but they've been a lot more aggressive lately, especially Paul George. His free throw numbers have skyrocketed. He shot as many free throws in the last two games as he had shot in the first 13. So, there's good signs that that he might be starting to figure out, or they might be starting to figure out how to use each other. The biggest issue with us is, unfortunately, as much as all the Thunder fans love him and I love him as well, is just Andre Robertson, because he's wicked against somebody like James Harden. He has to be used against the teams like the Warriors, who have so many players offensively that you need a lot of good defenders. But he's such a zero on offense. He absolutely hurts us. So I do wonder, and I would prefer to see him used as a starting two guard when they are playing the teams like the Rockets. But when they're playing a team that doesn't have those wing players, they're playing the Pelicans. They don't have those threats. So I would prefer to see Jeremy Grant slot in at the four and move Melo and Paul George down to get those minutes and just
maybe Abrines into the two guard there, or maybe
Abrines struggled with his shot a little bit, that could be it. He's a zero on defense, so that's you get the other issue with that. But no, he's definitely somebody that the Thunder like. There's no way that if the Knicks wanted to include Abrines, and I would say that he was possibly, that they would have asked for him initially, the Thunder would have not traded for Melo if it included Abrines. They're really high on him. So, he's definitely thoughts for the future. He just needs to pick up that defensive side of the games and become a more consistent shooter. That'll come with time. The biggest issue, Andre Robertson, because the issue you've got is, and you'll see if you look at the teams around the league and some of those teams that are doing good that don't necessarily have the star power of the Thunder are teams who have those 3.5 3-point shooters. Now you're talking about a stretch four or a stretch five, and the Thunder don't. They've got three. Westbrook's dangerous enough that you can't leave him open, and then you've got Melo and Paul George who are obviously very good. But on that starting five, you've got Adams and Robertson who are zeros from three. So, but you look at the makeup, you look at your Pistons. They've got the makeup of the team right. This is the NBA makeup these days is 3.5 to 4. And when I say half, I'm saying somebody who is probably going to shoot low 30s. Thunder don't have that. Well, they've got Robertson on the floor, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think the Thunder just because they do have the big names in Mello and Paul George there, they're getting scrutinized more than, I think they've gotten more scrutinized this season than they ever did with KD and Westbrook, and that was sort of big enough then, the criticism that they had, you know, Westbrook's taking dumb shots when KD should take them. I mean, their defense is second in the league. It's just they've tipped the table right over. They were the best in the clutch last season, now they're really bad in the clutch. So maybe they're oversharing, whereas they're not getting the assists, so they're sharing it but they're not passing it. When they get that flow going, coming to the into the clutch there, last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, I think they'll get it sorted. They've got the main part of the game sorted. I mean, their offense is middle of the pack, defense is right up there, and that's what you want to see with a new team that needed gel, is that the defense is right, and they've got that. So for me, I think they're definitely fine. They've had a couple of bumps in the road. I think they're just getting... I'd be more worried about the Cavs. I mean, everyone was, you're worried about the Cavs, how about the Thunder? But I think it's actually, no, you do need to worry about the Cavs' defense. I think the Thunder will be all right. I like what I've seen from Paul George. Mello's still being Mello, which is a bit of a concern, but at the end of the day, come playoffs, they've got game winners in that team. Adams is perfect for them. And if they use Roberson in those right situations, I think the Thunder are going to be fine. Aiden, what have you seen so far?
Well, with Roberson, and Adams is definitely a really good fit because he's just going to do anything they ask him to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed with Mello, like with the Thunder, from what I've seen, like I haven't seen too many of their games, but from what I've seen, essentially the big three are taking turns playing ISO ball. So like they're all getting their shots, but you know, like Carl said, no assists really happening. What I've seen with Mello is he just seems happier, and he's trying a bit more on defense, which is always a bonus. You don't really expect defense from Mello, but he's putting an effort, which you couldn't always say last season. My biggest thing with the Thunder is why Kyle Singler is still on the roster.
that's your biggest concern, or?
Yeah, they're going to be fine, but Kyle Singler is still collecting a paycheck, and that guy's horrible.
Yeah, there's no way they're going to be able to move him. You'd have to give you'd have to give picks after picks after picks to move him. The funny thing is that when he was signed, the talk about the amount that he was signed for, they were saying that it was a bit of a bargain contract, the Spurs were going hard at him and all those kind of things, and because he was supposed to be that stretch the 3-and-D small forward behind Kevin Durant, and it just never worked.
That's why we traded him.
He looked alright on the Pistons though, didn't he? I mean,
he's definitely declined once he got to the Thunder.
He was decent on the Piston.
Just yeah, because he was in the East.
Yeah, good point.
And I think he was part of the Reggie Jackson trade, wasn't he? Yes, he was.
Part of the Reggie with DJ Augustine. Yeah. And Reggie, we just needed to get rid of him. You know, he was obviously, I guess he's probably still had some, locker room issues there as well, right? He's just...
Yeah, smooth sailing.
I guess that... If there was a place for him to go, I don't think your guys would think twice about trying to ship him out for it. No, if you could get a decent point guard in return, right?
Yeah, well that Bledsoe one come up, but I thought it might happen. I thought there was a bit of a chance, but yeah, it didn't. But we'll see.
Got a decent point guard sitting on the bench, Ish Smith.
Oh yeah, he's been good. I like him in that role. Before we get to the Pistons, I was just going to ask GP as well. What do you think of these the guys at Houston coming in, playing a bit of time? Also, Dakari Johnson and Ferguson. What have you seen from them?
Ferguson looks, because he's long. And he definitely puts the effort in. Defensively, he's small, so he struggles against bigger guys. But he's definitely got the effort there. So there's definitely stuff to work on. He's just young. He needs a bit of time. Hustis, if you ask any Thunder fan about Josh Hustis, they'll tell you how much they love him. Billy Donovan doesn't seem to love him so much, but he's starting. He's obviously getting minutes at the moment, and he's getting minutes over Ferguson at the moment. The thing about Hustis is he's kind of a bigger Robertson. But he can shoot threes. His defense isn't as good though. He's definitely a 3-4 yep. rather than a 3 like Robertson is. He didn't seem to get much of a go last year, and he probably should have given how bad the team was last year.
I hardly saw him play last year. I think I've seen him more already this season than what I did last season.
Yep, that'd be right. And Dakari Johnson is he's good offensively, but he's an absolute sieve. He's like a poor man's Enes Kanter. He's not as good as him on offense, and he's probably worse than him on defense. So
worse than Kanter on defense.
Yeah. Yeah, he's slow. His footwork's really slow. Trying to read a pick and roll is tough for him at this stage. He's obviously always been a good offensive player. And if you chucked him in there and played him for 30 minutes, he would average double digits, I would imagine, quite easily. But he's not worth that on defense. He's gonna cost you a lot more than that on defense. Yep.
Another thing I'll just add as well, once they get a bit more out of Patterson, I think he could be quite a key in the long run of the season there. I think Patterson getting back to being fully fit will definitely help them as well.
Yep, that's a big thing. And I mean, obviously with his knees, is he going to get fully fit? That's the first question,
yeah.
I guess, that a lot of people will be asked. But hopefully that isn't the case, and hopefully he does get fully fit, and he'll be a really good option for them, especially if you look at a crunch time lineup where they probably have to remove, if you're looking at Hacker Adams and Hacker Robertson, they have to remove them both. You put Patterson in there at that center position. He's a strong enough defender, stretches the floor, so it actually becomes quite difficult for teams to kind of match up with them, or they match up probably pretty well with that Warriors death lineup.
Yeah, that would be quite an interesting matchup, wouldn't it? Patterson versus Draymond at center, and then just your bunch of wings, and then Westbrook and Curry. That'd be pretty cool to see, I think.
Yep, that would work. You have Jeremy Grant on there as well. Jeremy Grant's he's improved this year, and he looks good. So you pot him and Patterson into that lineup if you can't use Robertson and Adams, and I think it becomes quite a strong offensive lineup.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I suppose we might as well go into talking about my Pistons. Off to a bad start. After a really good start, the improved free throw shooting of Drummond has been bloody awesome to see. Getting two wins in a row is awesome to see. Five wins in a row now, 9-1 in the last 10, I think. 8-1 in the last 10, something like that. Beating Warriors, really good. A healthy Reggie Jackson, still Reggie Jackson, but playing a bit smarter, and Avery Bradley has brought something to the squad, which has been really good to see. I mentioned to JT last podcast as well I talked to him off air about that. Moving on, Marcus Morris, I think it was like I was explaining to him, because he's a Boston fan, so he's got Marcus Morris on his lineup now. So I like him as a player. I like his defense. I like his general play, but he was a real ball stopper for us last season, and I think this is a big reason we've changed our offense quite a lot. And having Tobias play more in that proper forward spot rather than facing up against smaller threes, and him really taking advantage of those slower fours that are still around, has really made a difference. So Morris took a lot of mid-range shots, even Tobias did, so we've got rid of that mid-range shot and we're focusing more on the Houston model where outside shooting or layup or dunk. So to me, that's the big change that we've made. And having heaps of healthy guys, and the other bonus was getting a guy like a vet like Tolliver in there. Leadership, good locker room guy, whereas we had more quite a younger bunch last season. So they are the main points I've seen of why we've been doing so well. So it'll be interesting to hear your guys' thoughts on the Pistons. Aiden, what do you agree with what my views I've seen there, or anything else you like?
I think you pretty much hit it on the head, but I think with something you didn't bring up, the style of play the Pistons are using is what Stan Van Gundy specialised in Orlando, you know, having the big man in and then surround him with shooters.
Yep.
I think Drummond's improvement at the free throw line is huge. Like, he's gone up literally close to 30%, which is incredible.
It's massive.
Yeah. I'm hoping it can sort of stay. I don't know if it can stay at that level, but if he can stay above 55%, that even that's a massive, massive improvement. Reggie's actually playing pretty well, which I'm surprised, to be honest. I thought he might have been done after last year. Sort of got in. Once you get in SVG's dog box, it's pretty hard to get out.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but Bradley's been huge for you guys. Harris has been awesome, Ish coming off the bench. Stanley Johnson seems to be struggling a little bit. Do you think they look to replace him in the starting lineup, or you just keep it as it is?
He hasn't played the last few games. No, I actually like him in there. He's sort of a glue guy, you know. He doesn't need to have... He can average 8 points, a few boards. I think he's underrated. Defense is underrated as well. So, hey, it's going to take him a while. It's only his third season. Starts getting that shot. I'd keep him in there because it's working. Having Tobias, next to him, and then Avery and Reggie and Drummond, that our starting lineup's actually working this season. It's, net positive. Reggie's actually got the highest net rating positive in our lineup. I think we keep Stanley there in the starting role. It just works well. I was calling for it last season that they should have, and they should have brought Tobias. I think we eventually did start Tobias off the bench. But, I thought having Stanley in the starting lineup just as a sort of glue guy, he's sort of fifth guy on offense. Yeah.
Only other thing I have a bit of a qualm with is not enough Boban.
Yeah.
Need more Boban.
It's hard because he's so effective at what he does, but does he really mesh with the rest of our team? I don't know.
He's incredibly effective though.
Yeah, like, he is. His record. He had record. Net rating as well. He was like above some legends in the game, but it was a limited minute size, sample size that they use. Boban is still Boban and he's awesome, so we should play him more. GP, what do you think about the Pistons so far?
Obviously they've come out, a little bit like what I was talking about before. They've probably outplayed where you would look at them. If you look at them by name, player name by name, you'd sit there and think they've probably outperformed that. I think one of the biggest things for you guys, when I'm looking at the stats and what players are worth when they're on and off the court, your bench is performing really highly, and that, a lot of that I guess comes from the fact that Anthony Tolliver is doing well. But even Galloway and Allison Kennard, they're all, their net ratings are really high.
Shooting very well. All of it.
And it becomes that, just what I was talking about before, the issue with the Thunder is the issue that you guys don't have, where you've got that three and a half, four shooters on the court at all times. And that's No, it's working perfect. That's the NBA these days. And if you've got that type of lineup, you don't necessarily, it's not the best player on the floor. No, it doesn't mean his team wins as much as it used to be, because team defenses are a lot smarter. So you need to be able to stretch those defenses out and put them on, put them under pressure. And the only way you can do that is having shooters on the floor. So that four out, one in kind of model, where you've got good shooters that are probably all. What's Stanley Johnson shooting like at 3-point?
Oh, his will be quite low. I'll have a look. I'll guess around the 30 mark. It would be quite low, I think. He's
but
never
somebody
really got.
You still have to half. You have to half watch him. You can't.
Yeah, he's your half guy. Like he's. Yeah. You don't want to leave him open, but hang on, I'll have it right here. Yeah, 33% this season.
Yeah, and not horrible. So he gets you. No, he gets you almost more than, no, slightly more than half kind of thing. To you get somebody driving the lane, and they're not kind of if they leave them in the corner, they know that they could be in trouble if the pass goes that way.
Yeah, he's a better shooter than that as well. I think that number's going to go up. Man, I like what I've seen from Kennard as well so far. Can create his own shot, can hit that, hit the spot up. Yeah, he's looking really good. Yeah, defense, bit of a question, but man, he looks good. He looks really good. So yeah, Galloway as well, shooting in a good clip. Tobias shooting in a good clip. Just hitting the shots and playing the game that they need to with what roster they've got set up. So, yeah, I'm liking it so far. Where do you think we can end up? Can we crack the top five? Do we just sneak in, or do we even miss out? Or what do you think? Have we shown enough?
I think the makeup of your team is especially in the East as a playoff makeup. Now you look at you guys at the top with the Celtics. The Celtics have got that same all around shooting. They probably got arguably one of the best setups, because they've got Horford Horford steps out and shoots threes. They've got the Marcus Morris as well, who shoots threes. He's playing four. So that setup, the way it works is that if you've got 3.5, 4, or 4.5 3-point shooters, you're gonna do well, especially in the regular season.
Yeah. Aiden, what are your prediction?
Oh, definitely playoff team. Definitely playoff team.
How high can we get over there?
I mean, I think, like, the thing is, like, all your guys are pretty hot, so there's bound to be some cool down. Like, it's just how basketball works. I think Cleveland's going to pick it up. I still think Cleveland's going to take your division. But I wouldn't be surprised if you guys were top five. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe even top four. Like, Washington has struggled a little. I've never been huge on Toronto, so I wouldn't be surprised if you guys cracked the top four, but 100% a playoff team.
Yeah, we should definitely make the playoffs. I don't know, I'm hoping for like fifth spot, but if we finish higher than sixth, I'll be pretty happy with that, really. Yeah, so there's Pistons sitting in second spot behind the Celtics at the moment. 10-3, pretty happy with that. Same as Golden State. No, actually, I think Golden State, have they gone to 11-3 with today's win?
Golden State are 11-3.
Yeah. So that's about our team review sorted out there. Now, podcastsport.com's prediction machine just about to get back up and running for the season. So, wanted to have a talk to GP about that. Something that's pretty interesting and for me, having a few bets as I do on the NBA. So yeah, if you want to talk a bit about the model you've got there, GP, and what it does and what it's predicting per game, and yeah, tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, cool. So I've been working on it quite a lot over the last couple of years. Complete rebuild from last year. Just wanted to add a few things in, and basically what I've got is we're looking at it runs. I was actually a little bit out when I told you how many calculations it runs. It's actually running 95 different calculations for every game. It does it instantaneously, all on just an Excel spreadsheet. But it's looking at winning percentage. Again, for overall against conference, home and away, so it's looking at the venue, and it's looking at last 10 for a trend, last 10 games, last 5 games for a trend as well. And then you're looking at that for the total combined points as well. So you're looking at all of those things as well, the overall, the location, the conference that they're playing against, the last 10, last 5 for points allowed. And points scored. The same for the plus minus when we're looking at that. And then you're looking at schedule penalizers that get added into it as well. So if won't be as big this year, obviously with the schedule
less
being stretched back-to-backs. Out.
Yep.
Yeah, but back-to-backs, a team would be penalised effectively a basket. It's not worth a huge amount these days. But if they start getting into a scenario where they I don't know, have they got rid of four and five and five and seven?
They are definitely still doing 4 and 6 days. I think they've got rid of. I think every team might have 1, 4, and 5. I think I heard that at the start of the season.
They'll be penalised 3 baskets from that. So it looks at when I'm looking at the penaliser from that, we're looking at how many possessions they have per game, the average points per possession, and how many baskets they're going to be penalised effectively.
Yeah. So putting all those stats and things together, and basically popping out a number of how many points you think they'll score against that team. So. Yeah, prediction machine is what it is. So, yeah, having all those different inputs of schedule and, all your different stats and that. So, you modified it a bit from last season, and it was really good last season. So, tracking GP's result with the prediction machine last season after the All-Star break, if you know a bit about betting, if anyone's listening that knows a bit, he made 38 units on the higher end predictions. So when I used it, I managed to make 38 units, which is pretty good, and that was over 10% return on investment. So every $100 you bet, basically you'd make $10 back. So there were some really good predictions in there. So they were so using the stronger predictions, going against whatever the bookie was giving you. So, for example, if GP's prediction machine picked the Thunder 120 and against Atlanta 100, so that'd be 220 combined points. And then the bookie was saying the over and under was only 210, so you'd definitely pick the over because that's 10 points over. So I was going on ones that had 5-point differential between the bookie and what the prediction machine was saying. So it was, you'd work the numbers pretty well there to get those. So and in saying that as well, sometimes you matched up exactly with the bookie, what the bookies were doing. So it's just going to be really interesting to see what numbers come out this season with your few adjustments you got.
Yeah, I think the biggest adjustment that's been made this season is I figured out a way to get an injured player in there. So and it's going to be a trending scale down to how much that player affects it. So if they're out, so at the moment I don't know for tomorrow, because there's quite a few people that are questionable tomorrow. So the Nets have got D'Angelo Russell and obviously Kyrie Irving for the Celtics are questionable, so I can't put them in at the moment and sort of give that. But if I was going to put them in, then it's going to affect the adjustment based on how much they are worth to the team on the court. So at the moment, that prediction's sitting at 113-104, so a 9-point win for the Celtics.
Yep.
and 217 or 216.8 for the total combined points. If we were then, if I was to look in at the player page and we look at what Kyrie Irving is worth to them. Now, I need to update it based on some of the last couple of stats, but Kyrie Irving's worth a couple of points a game to them. If both Kyrie and D'Angelo Russell are out, then that is going to, when we get up to Brooklyn, D'Angelo Russell is actually hurting the Nets when he's on the floor, according to the weighted net rating, which is the system that I'm using. So that takes the net rating and adjusts it for how many minutes they spend on the court, and all those kind of things. So if those two are out, the ability for the Celtics to actually come out and on top of that calculation would be that they would actually get a bit of a bump because D'Angelo Russell's hurting them more. So D'Angelo Russell's minus 3.2 versus Kyrie Irving's 2.1. You would see a little bit of a closer gap because Kyrie's worth more than D'Angelo Russell is off the court. So that's how it's going to work. If we had Kyrie Irving had been out for 3 or 4 games, obviously so it works on the average average of the net ratings once I've weighted them all versus that players. So those averages are going to start to change after a couple of games. So it's going to adjust actually how much Kyrie's worth to the Celtics based on how the other guys have picked up.
Yeah.
So hopefully it goes all right, but it's a bit of a trial and error at the moment with how that's actually going to work because it's never been used before. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. Like Aiden was saying before, like some guys don't rate Kemba Walker, your sort of advanced stats guys, and then you're saying, well, if you take Kemba off that team, they actually going to, you know, he's worth 10 points to the Hornets.
He's one of the biggest ones in the league. And it's interesting because I put this all together. I started doing it and I thought, shit, that looks high. But I listened to Nate Duncan's podcast and they review in their 15. They do a 15 and 30 or 15 and 60. They're doing the Eastern Conference. And the first one they did was the Charlotte Hornets. And they're saying how bad that team are when Kemba's off the court, so it kind of backed up what my weighted net ratings were saying. So cool. It's definitely worth a lot to them on the court.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so if you guys want to keep in touch, we go to the podcastsport.com Facebook page. Is that right? If you want to follow it.
Be put up on Twitter, and then at the end of the note after it would be probably put on the website in a couple of weeks time once Rob's up and running with that website. I'm just trying to look at the TAB odds and see what they've got for these games that are on tomorrow. They haven't even got them up. They have to go to Bet365. But yeah, so we've got at the moment. Rockets beating the Raptors by 9, Celtics beating the Nets by 9, and Spurs beating the Mavericks by 11.
Okay, yeah, so that sounds about right for most of those games, just going off that. So Rockets at home probably gives them a bit more advantage over the Raptors. I thought 9 points might be a bit too high, but seems about right at home. Yeah, Spurs, Dallas. Yeah.
Dallas are horrible.
Yeah.
So the Bet365 lines are 6.5 for the Rockets. So we've got a difference of what, 2.5 points.
2.5 there.
Yep. Over that total combined points for that game, we've got 211, and that's sitting 219. So
leaning towards under there, going off your model. So,
yep,
that'll be
yep,
yeah. And as you say, I mean, as the season goes on, the numbers get better and better with the more to use.
It works on stats. It's the only way that you can know if you're going to. You have to look at numbers. It's the only way you can try and predict stuff, I guess. So, just looking at the Spurs one, the total combined points that Bet365 have got is 201, and I've got 200.1. So there's
pretty close. There's,
it's not too bad. See how it goes.
So I'll definitely be sharing it there. So I might even share it up on the website. Get everyone interested going over, having a look at your prediction machine. So yeah, keep an eye out there. Any final thoughts, Aiden, on anything you want to pick at over the last couple of weeks, NBA wise?
There's one thing I was meant to bring up with you guys before that I forgot to mention. I watched the Cavs Rockets game a few days ago. Clinton Capella looks legit. Like, he looks legitimately good.
Doing well for me in fantasy.
Yeah.
He's exactly what the Rockets need,
Yep. Yeah, I was a little worried about them last season when he was starting and they got rid of Dwight. Not for the fact they got rid of Dwight, but more the, I didn't know if Capella was up to it, but this season he's showing that I think he's up to it. He's been playing ridiculously well. That's all.
It's worth 9 points according to my weighted net rating.
There we go.
There you go. Backing it up with the machine. Bit of talk about Porzingis for MVP. What do you guys think? Can he get? Do the Knicks need to just finish in the playoffs to make that possible? He's been balling. He's been awesome so far. I even think he's been better than Giannis, in my opinion.
He's been pretty good. I don't know if making like scraping into the eight is going to be enough to do it, but if the Knicks can get like a 5 seed, I think that might be enough.
Imagine that.
That'd be enough to get like some serious conversation going.
Yeah, and I was listening to a certain podcast as well. So the narrative has changed that fast on the Knicks from, they need to tank, to all of a sudden, they need talent around Porzingis so they can make it run through the playoffs. It's like, it's just flipped. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's sort of shows.
Harden's giving MVP.
Harden?
James Harden, yeah.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Even when CP3 does come back?
It's the 1 year removed rule. You know how defensive player of the year always seems to be a year late.
Yeah.
You know, the player that got it last year always gets it the following year. I think that Harden will get some of the pity votes because of that.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought he should have got it last year.
Yep.
He'll definitely be up there. Alright, well that about wraps it up really for episode 3 from us. So yeah, thanks GP for making it on. Look out on podcastsport.com and check you on Twitter at Snowy Swords, I think it is.
Snowy's World,
that's it. It's not Swords.
Yeah.
Snowy's World, yep. So cheers for coming on, and yeah, cheers Aiden once again for making it. You can follow us at OnPointCarl, at OnPointAiden. Check us out on onpointball.com and podcastsport.com, and GP used to help us out quite a bit, so get on that prediction machine and give it a follow. So cheers guys.
Have a good lads.
Over and out.
Have a good one.